You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 190. Today's episode's a Q&A episode with listener questions. The last show was all about the history of draining New Orleans with author Richard Campanella. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make the show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space at hnoc.org/firstdraft. Through November 5th, 2023, you can see their exhibit about the women's right to vote titled Yet She Is Advancing, New Orleans Women and the Right to Vote from 1878 to 1970. The 19th Amendment, of course, granted American women the right to vote in 1920, but Louisiana laws effectively disenfranchised black women. The exhibit tells a decades-long story through objects, images, documents, and interactive displays, and through the words of New Orleans women who for nearly 100 years persisted in their struggle to obtain the vote. And also, until October 8th, 2023, you can check out the Smithsonian's traveling exhibit, American Democracy, A Great Leap of Faith. As always, the Historic New Orleans Collection is free. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. The most frequent questions I get are about moving to New Orleans. If you're ready to make the move, you're going to need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. New Orleans is a terrific city, but choosing the neighborhood that's the best fit for you can be overwhelming. Liz makes that process fun and easy. Reach out to Liz at lizwoodrealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. Many members of our community have done just that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. The other thing that really sets Liz apart is what she does after she helps you find a home. She does a great job at building community and helping you get connected with people in your new area. When you're ready to make the move to New Orleans, reach out to Liz. While you're looking for a new home, you're probably going to need to secure financing. And that's where Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Mortgage comes in. Reach out to Tommy and let him help you get everything in place. That's what we did when we did our refinance, and it was as smooth as could be. We went through the same process with Tommy when we were considering purchasing a different home, and it was just as easy. Reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Bank, and we'll put a link in the show notes. And last but not least, I want to talk about our newest sponsor, All the Bitter. They make 100% alcohol-free bitters using organic ingredients. Winners of 20 awards from major spirit competitions, they can be used in alcohol-based and alcohol-free concoctions. I've tried them in multiple drinks and on vanilla ice cream, too. They have four main bitters now, with several experimental varieties on the way. The ones I have are the New Orleans, inspired by Peychaud's, as well as Orange, Lavender, and Aromatic, which is inspired by Angostura. Place your order at allthebitter.com and use code BBS15 to get 15% off your order, or you can shop locally in New Orleans at Dreamhouse Lounge. Now, on to today's topic. About every 10 episodes or so, we do a Q&A episode where we solicit questions from listeners via Patreon supporters and our Facebook community, the Beyond Bourbon Street crew. Join one or both if you want to get your questions answered in a future episode. I typically do these episodes alone, but today I have a guest. He commented that he could add some insight to some of the questions he saw posted, so I invited Chris Marshall to join me. Chris is a previous guest, a good friend, a Patreon supporter, and a New Orleanian of 5 years or so. So welcome to the podcast, Chris. How are you?
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Good.
My fourth appearance, I believe, on your air, if you will.
You're getting up there with Richard Campanella.
Well, yeah.
You may have to write a book.
I'm certainly no Richard Campanella.
So how long have you been a New Orleanian now?
5 years. You nailed it.
I did.
Moved here in March of 18, so a little over five and a half.
So one of the reasons that I thought it would be fun to have you on is that you and your wife, Jen, who came up with the name Beyond Bourbon Street, by the way, for longtime listeners, you guys tend to do some different things than we do. And so I thought you would have a different perspective. You eat at different places, go to different places. We have two kids, so we're running in that direction. You have two dogs, so you're running in a different direction.
We do all the things. There's no question about that.
Yeah. And I like your perspective as a still newer New Orleanian, but certainly a New Orleanian. You guys have put roots down in the community. So you ready to jump in?
Yeah.
All right. As always, questions from our patrons come first. So let's see. Melissa Walker asks, and I think we'll just kind of go back and forth on these, sure. So feel free to jump in. Top five restaurants right now, and she puts in parentheses, in the Bywater, the French Quarter, or walking distance to those that you'd suggest. So the top five restaurants that we'd suggest in either in the French Quarter, the Bywater, or walking distance.
There's probably no way we stop at five, right?
No, on this, probably not. And somewhere I thought she had said affordable. I don't see that in my notes, but let's try to keep that in mind.
Yeah, okay.
You want to start?
Sure. So I actually made a little list. Unlike you, I read the questions before we start. So I think... honestly, we're talking about the Bywater. I'm going to go with the Joint, which is an awesome barbecue place over there, right not too far from Bacchanal, which is also on my list. Really good food outside. You could probably go there now. I don't know that I would have gone there like a week or two ago.
Right, we're in the 80s today. It wouldn't be bad at either of those places right now.
Jennifer loves Capulet. I haven't been, but she loves Capulet.
I have.
Over there.
Yeah, Capulet is... vegan friendly, certainly, or vegetarian friendly, definitely. Lighter meals, almost like new American tapas is what I would call it. Yeah. Other places that come to mind in that area in the Marigny, I really like Alma Cafe, which is a Honduran place. Really, really good for breakfast and lunch. I haven't been for dinner. I like Budsy's Thai, also in that area. You don't think of New Orleans and Thai food, but Budsy's is... I think on the corner of Rampart and St. Claude, or right in that area.
It's in the Marigny. Back in that neighborhood.
Yeah, that's another one. Closer to the French Quarter even, I think people overlook Buffa's Lounge, which is a fun place. The food's good. It's not the best food you've ever had in the world, but it's certainly good, and it has the advantage of being a place that has live music almost every night. And because they serve food, it's kid-friendly, so that's going to come up in a question later on. And then right down the street from there, of course, is Port au Call. Good burgers. They serve their burgers with mounds of cheese and baked potatoes instead of French fries. So that's a handful of restaurants in that area. You mentioned Bacchanal in passing. I would also add to that list over in that area is Pizza Delicious. And what's connected right next to Pizza Delicious, Bracciol.
Yeah, Bracciol is there, yeah.
So kind of... loosely patterned after a German beer hall. They have not a huge menu, but a good menu there, and decent beer as well. So there's a bunch of answers there for you, Melissa. Several of our listeners, including Melissa, asked several questions, Chris. So the next question I'll take, she asks about the Museum of Art in City Park. Is it actually mandatory to purchase tickets in advance? And the short answer is no, unless there is a scheduled exhibit, like a special exhibit. If there's a special exhibit, then they tend to have timed tickets, and so you'll want to purchase ahead of time. But if you're just coming in, like right now, I don't think they have a special exhibit going on. If you're just coming in town, you can walk in. Those tickets are timed as well, so you might have to wait a few minutes, but certainly no big deal there. Incidentally, right next to the New Orleans Museum of Art, Chris mentioned the weather. We have had many, many days of record-breaking temperature at or above 100 degrees. Today happens to be a really nice day on the last day of August. A day like today would be really nice to go in the sculpture garden adjacent to the New Orleans Museum of Art. I think it's one of the best sculpture gardens in the country. It's won many accolades. It's a nice place. I know you guys have been for theater performances out there.
Yeah, I'm over here nodding, which obviously you can't see on a podcast. But yeah, I've been there several times. We are actually members of NOMA, so... I've been there a few times with Jen, and actually took Jen's mom there one of the times she came in. She braved, speaking of heat, she braved the heat. But yeah, they do. There's some Shakespeare out there once in a while and other stuff. So
yeah,
it's so a well-used space.
That's a fun thing. If you're going to go to the New Orleans Museum of Art and you're going to go when it's not terribly hot, the sculpture garden's really nice. So if you had to wait a little while for your timed tickets, or if you just wanted something else to do, really neat. All right, let's move on. Mark Mazzoni says... We know the connection between New Orleans and French culture is very deep. Does this extend to wine? Do restaurants with great wine lists tend to favor French wine? And what are your favorite wine bars in the city? Do you want to start with that, or do you want me?
My sense is, and it's only a sense, that wine lists and wine menus here are largely based on people's taste. I mean, obviously, they want to sell the wine that they buy. Probably places like Antoine's, things like that, may tend toward more expensive European bottles.
Yeah.
But for the most part, my sense is that you see largely the same with a few maybe differences in wine that you see for other places, but I don't know if...
Yeah, I think it's heavily a California menu is what you're mostly going to get. Antoine's has an amazing wine cellar. Incidentally, if you go to Antoine's, you can ask for a tour, and you can ask to go see the wine cellar, and they'll take you to see that. You should do that if you're interested in wine. There's a great wine bar called Della Chase. They have a good selection. They do have some European wines. Clancy's, which is my wife's favorite neighborhood restaurant, has a good wine list, and they have some French wines on the list. I think Brightson's, another favorite that comes up all the time, has a small but good wine list and has some French wine on the list as well. I think it's an interesting question you ask. While the attachment to France is deep, I think Chris is right that they're going to put on the menu what people are going to drink. And what most people are going to drink most of the time in most places is going to be California wine. You know, you'll see some wines from the Loire Valley and some of the Italian places particularly, you know, tend to have some lighter wines, and you might find some either Italian or French wines there. But by and large, if you really had your heart set on French wine, I would go to Antoine's or Arnaud's.
I agree with that. And if I can put in a plug for a new business in the Loire Garden, it's called Tell Me. It's focused on natural wines, so more natural fermentation, so maybe a little bit funkier, which obviously I gravitate toward. I just like all those weird funky flavors. So
right, you like sours and gosses and yeah. When it comes to
yep.
beer.
Mm-hmm. So, and they just opened relatively recently.
So when you said that, it reminded me of a place that I've recorded before on magazine as well called Second Vine Wine. And it's a wine bar. It's a really casual place. It happens to be very close to Le Petit Grocery and Saba, I think, across the street.
No, I think that's right.
And so neither of those places have a very big bar. And so they sort of function as the overflow area if you're waiting for a table at either of those places. I don't remember there being a lot of French wine, but it's a really cool little spot, particularly if you have reservations at either of those two restaurants and want to grab a glass of wine or even just go hang out and have wine there. So that's another place for you. Our next question actually comes from you, Chris. Where would you go in the CBD French Quarter Marigny to beat the heat for a not-too-crowded drink and a bite to eat? So my initial reaction when I read that was Manolito in the French Quarter. A tiny, tiny, I don't know, three-top table bar maybe. They might have a tiny spot upstairs. Right. Not much bigger than somebody's living room. Really, really good drinks. Terrific bartenders who know what they're doing and can explain to you the details of a drink, can explain to you the history of a drink. They have small plates. I don't really think of it as a dinner place, but they do have a menu, and their food's fine. So that's the one that comes to mind.
And I'm going to also say they're very passionate about that culture. So they focus on Cuban Caribbean cocktails, mm-hmm. and very passionate about that culture, very knowledgeable about that culture. And unless I'm 100% wrong and someone can correct me, they're also Cajuns. So they did a lot of work in support of Ida relief mm-hmm. after that
they
happened.
Did.
So a lot of good stories at Manolito. So
that's the one that comes to mind. I think, again, in the Bywater area, you mentioned Bacchanal earlier. You know, it's one of those places, it's almost all outdoors, so you're not going to beat the heat when it's 100 degrees. But when it's just a little bit cooler, you can find a little shade there, lots of live music there, good bites to eat there, good wine, of course, as well. And then another place that I happen to know is one of Chris's favorites and is mine too, is Parlo's Beer Lab. They have an outdoor space that they have somehow shaded enough that you can get under a fan, or there's a very small space inside. That's a fun place. They don't have food, but they often have pop-ups. That's another good place. But if I could only pick one, it would be Manolito. All right, we should do that sometime. James Redman, do you see the population of New Orleans increasing dramatically in the next 10 years? Is it doing that now? So I'm going to weigh in on this, but then I'd be curious about your perspective, again, having chosen to move here. I actually see it going the other direction. If I were going to make a prediction, I would say that in 10 years, the population of New Orleans will be lower than it is now. And I think that is due somewhat because of the infrastructure. You know, New Orleans is a wonderful place to live, but it's a hard place to live. We have infrastructure problems. We have political problems. We have police challenges. Crime is going to come up, I think, later in the episode. I'm not so sure that I agree that crime is worse off than in most major cities and that it's pretty isolated, in my opinion. But I also think you have global warming and you have the frequency of the hurricanes coming, although we had a mild season last year. And so far, it's been okay this year, although we're getting into kind of prime hurricane season, if you will, particularly as we think about just having passed Katrina and Hurricane Idalia having hit Florida yesterday and today. My instinct is that there is literally less geography here than there's ever been, and that's going to continue to be the case. And we're getting closer and closer to being a coastal town. And so my bet, if I had to put money on it, is that the population is actually going to decline rather than increase in the next 10 years. I don't know what your thoughts are. And obviously, you and Jen chose to come here, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah, so that would, I think you're right. I think decline would be the safe bet. That's certainly what recent census data shows. The most recent census that came out did show a decline, or maybe just holding steady. For all the reasons that Mark mentioned, I think it's, you know, it's getting to be a more difficult place to live. So we came here 5 years ago. I'll take that part. We came here 5 years ago, and we did that. Those of you who've heard us on the podcast before, Jennifer and I have been together on the podcast a couple of times. You know, that was largely driven by her love of the city, and of course the fact that she was very close friends with Marie through school and met Mark later on and all that. So we do love it here. And as Mark said, we have put down some roots in the community. We're a member of the crew of Red Beans, which I'm going to raise again later on if I get a chance. So it's a Lundi Gras. So the Monday before Mardi Gras Day walking crew. It's a lot of fun. So we do that. We're very sort of invested in our neighborhood. If we ever get to live in our house again, we're doing some renovations right now. So hopefully one day soon we'll be back over there. But yeah, in general, I think Mark's right. And I think that there are a lot of other factors too, honestly. The insurance, homeowners insurance is going up and getting more expensive. And there are some cases where people can't get policies. Can't tell you how many insurers have pulled out of Louisiana, just like Florida, just like California. So
yeah, it's gotten, yeah. It used to be an affordable place to live, and it's now an expensive place to live, and I think that surprises people. You know, the draw, of course, is the culture, and that's why, in part, that's why I do the show, right? I mean, because culture is so important, I think asking Chris to come on, it's because he and Jen have really embraced the culture, and I think that's going to come up in some of the answers to our other questions, but that's the lure of it. The downside is all the things we just mentioned. You know, so it's a trade-off, and I think lots of people make the decision that it's worth it. You know, heck, I mentioned Liz Wood. We have a realtor sponsoring the show precisely because so many people are interested in moving to the city that listen to this podcast. But I also think that it's a decision that people that come love it, but there are a lot of people that are turned off by it. And I think, you know, you just kind of got to weigh those things for you personally. Mark Wingfield actually has several questions here, Chris, and he's a Patreon, so we will indulge them.
Absolutely.
I recently got involved in my church looking for ways to help the homeless in my area. Homelessness seems to be a real problem everywhere, and making a difference in that population is hard but necessary. Curious what efforts you've seen and are currently seeing churches, volunteer groups, and the city make to help the homeless in New Orleans, and how New Orleans locals view this issue. So I'll go first. The city has cut back a lot of services, frankly, and I think is doing less to help the homeless than they have in many years. There are homeless encampments, if you will, under the interstates in various places in the city. Some of the shelters, both city-based as well as church-based, have closed. So there are fewer shelters. There are fewer services for people on the streets. By day, many of you know that I work for the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we put a lot of effort into helping homeless veterans get off the street. But there certainly are a lot of church groups. There, you see vans of people pulling up. My kids' school has a ministry that I think it's called Fishes and Loaves or Breads and Loaves, where they prepare food every day and the trucks go out and help feed the homeless. But I think like most large American cities, it's a chronic problem and one that's underserved, frankly, in terms of both tax dollars and community help. I don't know what you see.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right on all that. And a couple of other things I would add to that. I'm pretty interested in this issue, actually. And so I remember reading an article about the point in time count, which happens every, I believe, March. I think I'm right about that. And so that's kind of a snapshot census of people without homes. And it went up 15% from the year before. That count went up 15% from the year before in New Orleans. And that probably is largely driven by a lot of the same economic factors we just talked about. You know, it's cost more to live here. Rents are going up, and it's just more expensive to live here. So people who are on the edge are going to fall off. And I will not I will not get directly and deeply into politics, but the city council has had a couple of missteps lately that of things that didn't actually get passed. But you talked about helping folks direct services under the interstates, and there was recently a resolution on the table that would prohibit a group from doing just exactly that, what your kid's school does and everything else, if they couldn't in turn remove all the refuse that came along with that service, because there's a rodent problem and so forth. So yeah, it's that's a little tone deaf.
Yeah, definitely. Right. You have organizations who are willing to help. And that goes back to Katrina, frankly. After Katrina, one of the things we saw were church groups and youth groups from all over the country, people coming to help. And so it would be like saying, we don't want that help if you're not also going to help clean up any of the mess that comes with the help. It doesn't make much sense. I think affordable housing, Chris just kind of alluded to that. There's a problem with affordable housing here in this city, like there is in a lot of large cities, and that has contributed, right? Things have gotten more expensive as it is, and housing has gotten more expensive. And so we're a tourism-based industry economy. And so the very people that need to work in those industries or that choose to work in those industries, you want them to ideally live close to their places of work, and they can't afford to do that. You know, in some places, they can't afford to work at all, or not work. They can't afford to live at all. And so I think that's contributing to the homeless problem here. Are there any restaurants, bars you would recommend in the lakefront area northwest of City Park? You threw me with Northwest. I know vaguely where that is, but I'm a New Orleanian, Mark. We don't use ordinal directions.
You go too far that direction, you're going to be in the lake.
It seems I hardly ever hear a recommendation for that area. I'm sure there's some in your book. There are, but I can't remember any standing out. So this is a good question, and it's one that we haven't done a lot on the podcast. So out near the lakefront, I'm going to broaden that area and include Gentilly, Chris, because it's an opportunity to plug the original Fiorella's Cafe, which has some of the best fried chicken in the city. It happens to be in the building that housed Teddy's Grill, my family's restaurant, for 36 years. But that's a really good place. There's a couple other spots there. But if you go out towards what used to be called West End, we're going to actually talk about boating later in the episode. And so out in what was West End, there used to be a lot of restaurants, but there are some coming back out in that area. And then you, not far from there, is Bucktown, which is technically in Metairie because you cross over the 17th Street Canal to get there. But then you get to a couple really good places there. Station 6, the original Deanie's Seafood, which is the one that's worth visiting, in my opinion, and a place called R&O's, which is an old-time mom-and-pop sandwich shop, plate lunch kind of place that's really, really good. And then if you go back out towards the lake, there's Felix's Oysters, which is a good choice. And also what's nice about that, again, maybe not on a 100-degree day, but on an 80-degree day, beautiful views of the harbor there and the sailboats going in and out and views of Lake Pontchartrain. So I don't know if you have anything to add to that list.
So I'm going to take you back to, sorry, Mark, I'm going to take you back to that Gentilly neighborhood. So practically across the street from Fiorella's, a little farther than that, is a place called Aphrodisiac. It's run by a husband and wife team and a lot of their family as well. And he is a Jamaican, was born in Jamaica, and she is from Louisiana, I think out by Baton Rouge. You want to talk about Caribbean Creole, that's what that is. And it's just absolutely delicious. Used to be a food truck. Actually, in the aforementioned Ida, a tree fell on their food truck and was irreparable. But they used the insurance money and saved up and got a brick-and-mortar spot out in Gentilly. So that's really a great place to go. And I'm going to move that geography a little bit farther, but I'm going to say Junior's on Harrison, actually, which is it's run by a local family. They've got several restaurants, I think, around town, but actually opened right at the beginning of the pandemic and managed to keep it going. But it's very much kind of a neighborhood restaurant feel, burgers, fries, fried chicken, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, since you're expanding into Lakeview, which is right there where the park is, so that's fair game.
They call it Lakeview for a reason.
Right. There's two other choices I would add there. Scott Craig, the owner of Katie's, has Francesca's, which again is a burger and plate lunch kind of place with a good muffalata as well. And then there's a place called Backyard Nola, which is basically a barbecue place, but if you are into bourbon, they actually age their own bourbon in barrels and then a bottle, and they don't distill, but they barrel age there and they bottle there. It's become a really good bourbon bar, probably one of the top five in the city. and decent barbecue. Good, I would say good lunch place. It's a good place with kids, actually. There's a lot of outdoor space there. And then I'm going to extend it again to the edge of the park. So, Mark, you're getting your money's worth on all of this. There's a good place that goes overlooked, and that's MoFo. Really, really good spot on, what is that, on City Park, is it City Park Avenue, I think? It's right near Delgado Community College.
It's right by the cemeteries.
It's a blend of Southeast Asian and Louisiana food. Mike or Mark Giolotta is the chef and the owner. Really inventive, really creative cuisine there. Doesn't look like much when you approach it from the street. And right in front of it is a good place, Ike's Snowballs. So a good snowball place. But MoFo is one to keep in mind. So there's a handful for you there, Mark. Let's see. He's got a different question. I asked this on a different New Orleans page and got lots of input. My wife and I will be celebrating our 25th anniversary during our next visit to New Orleans. Congratulations. We're considering Mr. B's, G.W. Finn's, and Brightson's as dinner options, but our schedule only allows for two. At which place should we eat our special anniversary meal? Which should we go to for another nice night out, and which should we skip? I chose those three options because they are the places we've never been and are places I hear a lot of good things about. So I'll go first, Chris. My order would be Brightson's and G.W. Finn's, and I would skip Mr. B's. And I say that even though I just ate at Mr. B's and they have my last meal, which is the gumbo ya-ya and the barbecue shrimp. But I think both Brightson's and G.W. Finn's are a little bit fancier. Not necessarily more expensive. I think they're all kind of in the same price range. They're a little bit more intimate, is what I would say. Mr. B's caters to tourists and locals, but I would say there's a higher degree of tourists there than they are at the other two. Certainly, Brightson's is easily in my top three restaurants, and it's small, it's intimate, it's in a Creole cottage. Chef Frank is going to come out and say hi to you. You're going to have a wonderfully memorable experience. You're going to have perfect service there. G.W. Finn's is white tablecloth, really fresh seafood, although I would put Brightson's first because I think the seafood there is the best in the city, and I'll give you a chance. I know you just ate there, Chris. So that would be my order, as much as that's tough because I love Chef Michelle at Mr. B's. That would be the one I would skip. How about you, Chris?
That's a shock, frankly, because I know about that last meal story.
Right.
I would have sworn Mr.
Just ate there.
Would be in there. But yeah, I would actually go in more in the same order. We did just eat at Brightson's a week ago tonight, as a matter of fact, with our neighbors and some friends. And I had a snapper that was absolutely fresh. Like a lot of people, I've had the opportunity to eat seafood essentially fresh caught. And it was as close to that as anything you'll ever have. But everything on the menu is great. It's as Mark said, intimate. And if you're going to put it on a scale of intimacy, I would say it's much more so than G.W. Finn's. The dining room at G.W. Finn's is actually pretty big.
That's true.
It's not terrible. It's not like over the top loud or anything like that. But Brightson's, for me, is your special occasion place for sure.
Yeah. And Chef Frank, in my opinion, gets the fresh. He has had relationships with fishermen for two decades. He gets, in my opinion, the freshest and the best seafood in the city. If you were going for strictly a seafood restaurant, I think G.W. Finn's is way up there near the top of the best. But I think that Frank consistently gets, if there's seafood on the menu, and there always is, you can count on it being as close to fresh caught as anything you're going to catch yourself.
And I do want to say about G.W. Finn's, there's a pretty common, and it's understandable, misconception that G.W. Finn's is part of some sort of a chain or something like that, so because it has that name, but it is not. So it's a local place. A local chef lives up the street from us, as a matter of fact. So
Really good.
Yeah.
But Brightson's would be number one on my list of that list. All right, Donald Tatera. We're very soon moving to New Orleans. Congratulations. I'm into sailing. Do you know anything about the active sailing clubs on Lake Pontchartrain? I know a tiny bit, and I actually tried to know more, and I was denied that. The Southern Yacht Club is the second oldest sailing club in the United States, and I reached out to them and wanted to do an episode, and because they're a private club, they declined my invitation to do that. I wasn't so interested in the clubbiness part of it. I was interested in the fact that they have such a long history of sailing. And then right next to it is the New Orleans Yacht Club. Again, those places are side by side. They are right in the area we were talking about when Chris and I were answering one of the earlier questions from Mark about places to eat. They're in what's called West End. So there's a little park there called West End Park. You can actually purchase a yacht house or a house over a slip. But there are slips at both of those places, both very active with sailing, both sailing for fun as well as regattas. So often if you go out, I think there's a Monday or a Wednesday night regatta, you can go out to the lakefront and see that. But those are the two places you want to check out, the New Orleans Yacht Club and the Southern Yacht Club, both really nice. The New Orleans Yacht Club is not quite as old, but it is still pretty old. But the Southern Yacht Club, I know, is the second oldest in the United States. So there you go, Donald. Congratulations on moving. Jim Cooper, thank you for your podcast and your book. You're welcome. Are you planning a new edition? Not that it needs it, just curious. So Patreons know that I'm currently negotiating to see if there's going to be a second edition. I think there will be. That process involves going back to the editor and saying, you know, how do you feel about the deal and the sales? The sales have been very good, so thank you to all who have purchased. If you haven't purchased, you can go to beyondbourbonst.com. And there's a link there to purchase the book either from Amazon or from me directly if you want an autographed copy. But we are talking about it. We're tentatively talking about 2025 as a release date. So by that point, the book will be 2.5-3 years old. So I think that's typical in the travel industry that they're usually on a 2 or 3 year cycle. So that's what we're working on. Hopefully more to come. I put a proposal in their lap through my agent, and we're waiting for a response. So we should know in September. So that's September starts tomorrow. Let's see, Cliff Hochberg. I actually got to meet Cliff. Cliff is a member. He comes to a jazz band camp every year, Chris. And they get to perform at Preservation Hall. They get to perform in the second line. So pretty interesting. My question for the next podcast is, I understand there's been a growth of people coming to New Orleans from Vietnam. Can you talk about this has influenced the food scene and where might be some recommended places to eat Vietnamese food? While Lori will be staying in the French Quarter, we don't mind taking reasonable Lyft or Uber to get there. So that's another episode. I have been wanting to do a history of the Vietnamese in New Orleans. There were known as the boat people in the late 70s and early 80s. A very large population of Vietnamese came to New Orleans and certainly influences our food, including even our Mardi Gras traditions. Dong Phong is one of the most popular king cakes, and that is made out in New Orleans East, where there is the Dong Phong Bakery, but a very large community of Vietnamese. Out there are several restaurants. I mentioned MoFo, which is not owned by a Vietnamese guy, but very much has that influence. Are there places that you know of that you like for Vietnamese food?
Yeah, so Dong Phong, first of all, your past guest and my friend Matt Haynes, who wrote the Big Book of King Cake, mm-hmm. has a really nice several-page spread in there about Dong Phong. And mm-hmm. but it's not just for King Cake. So they've got some award-winning food just generally out there. I think they're only open for breakfast and lunch. I don't think they're a dinner spot at all. And it's, I don't know what you think is reasonable for a Lyft or an Uber ride, but it's, you know, about as far as you can get. Mm-hmm. It's out there hard by what, Bayou Sauvage out there. I mean, it's way out there, but it is worth the trip. You've never seen anything until you see a whole bunch of New Orleans lined up in the days and weeks before Mardi Gras hoping to get one of those cakes. Mm-hmm. And what makes those different is that cream cheese icing, which is delicious. As far as other places, Mint Vietnamese actually is really good.
It's been there.
A lot closer. It's in the Ferret area. And I'm struggling to think. I'm actually looking at a map. I'm cheating a little bit, Mark, but
that's okay. So the Ferret Corridor, I'll buy a little time while you're looking. Ferret Corridor basically runs from Jefferson Avenue to Napoleon. It's not that long, maybe 8 blocks, but there are, gosh, I don't know, 20 restaurants and bars in that area, including, we were talking about wine bars earlier, but just for cocktail bars, Cure is one of the best bars in the city and is right there. But I haven't been to Mint.
So, yeah, Mint is really good. I have not been here. I think Jennifer has, but I'm going to, on Jennifer's recommendation, and if I butcher the pronunciation, please forgive me, but it's Lee's Baguette Bon Mi Cafe, right near there, right not too far from Mint. And then I learned something. There's a corner store called Singleton's Market that's way out in the Black Pearl.
Yeah, I've been there.
That's owned by a Vietnamese family. And they have apparently fantastic banh mi, and I've had the pho, so.
I forgot about that. I have eaten there. They actually have a really good fried shrimp po' boy there, but they do. They have a Vietnamese menu and kind of a traditional New Orleans corner store menu. Yeah. Tiny place, nothing to write home about in terms of looks, but really good food. The owner is usually the one in the back doing the cooking. It's a man and a woman that own the place, but the man is usually back there doing the cooking. Yeah, I forgot about Singleton's. That's
a
great call.
And Gretna is kind of a hot spot, too.
Yes.
So Ton Din is over there, which is really good. Mm-hmm. And there are, I think, three or four different others over there as well. But yeah, Ton Din is probably my favorite of those.
And there's a big Asian market, and I think that's going to come up a question. There's a big Asian market over in the West Bank as well. So there's some good ones for you there. Mark Wingfield is back. Are there any restaurants, bars, other attractions that locals generally avoid and often talk poorly about that you still find worth a visit? I'm thinking of places like Court of Two Sisters, Pat O'Brien's, Mother's, etc. You know, I think that locals tend to avoid Bourbon Street, but there are good places on Bourbon Street. I think going to Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop is a lot of fun, getting a purple drink there, the ambiance there. I think Fritzl's Jazz Pub is one of the best jazz places in the city, period, and it happens to be on Bourbon Street. You know, when I was younger, much younger, college age, high school age, I would go to places like Razoo's or Tropical Isle, where they have the hand grenades. When I was a little bit older, we'd go to Pat O'Brien's. I'm still not opposed to going to Pat O'Brien's, particularly in the inside, in the piano bar. That can be a lot of fun. So, you know, I think in general, people don't spend a lot of time in the French Quarter. New Orleans has so many great neighborhoods. You tend to gravitate, and I'll turn it to Chris in a minute because he's a big proponent of this, but tend to gravitate to your neighborhood spots. You know, the other places you mentioned, I think there are better choices. You know, I think that people go to the Court of Two Sisters because it's a beautiful spot and it's open for brunch. I'm not such a fan of a buffet-style place, and I think there are so many other places that do the type of food they do better. But if you have a big group and you want to sit in a gorgeous courtyard, then it fits the bill. So I don't know. What do you think? Are there places that you find as a New Orleanian that you avoid particularly?
You know, yes, but I'm just going to go back to what you were saying and essentially agree with you that you just embrace the kitsch to some extent.
Yeah.
You know, Pat O'Brien, there's nothing wrong with sitting in the courtyard at Pat O'Brien's on a nice day and having a hurricane,
you know,
or whatever it is. You just have to know that's where you're going. It's like going to Disneyland, you know, or Disney World. That's where you are. Piano Bar is a lot of fun.
It is.
It's a lot of fun. And mm-hmm. and so we actually wound up there recently almost accidentally. So, you know, it happens. It happens. Right. You get sucked in. But and Purple Drink at Lafitte's, I don't know what's in that. And I don't, well, they probably know. But but yeah, it's
strong,
not to be taken lightly.
Right.
But yeah, there are certainly places I avoid. And you talked about neighborhoods. That inertia is tough, you know, if you've got to pass so many places to get to the quarter, sometimes it's tough, but there are great reasons to go down there.
Yeah, I don't think that there are many that people avoid. People chuckle, you know, it's all about excess or about the reverse of that and about pacing yourself. You know, when the whole reason I created the podcast is this idea that people don't get off Bourbon Street, right? If all you do is go to Razoo's for 3-to-1 drinks and 3-for-1 drinks and go to get a hand grenade and go get a couple of drinks at Pat O'Brien's, and then you're getting sick in the street or you're hungover because you've had all this sweet stuff. One, you haven't really experienced New Orleans, and two, you could have walked just 2 blocks off of Bourbon Street and had an incredibly different experience. For whatever reason, the Sobu comes to mind, south of Bourbon, the bar/restaurant. Manolito comes to mind. There's so many places like that where you could just have taken a couple of steps, one turn, and had a completely different experience. And so while I would say even the kitschy things are fun and worth doing, that shouldn't be your whole New Orleans experience, nor should it be off the list. If you've never done those things, they're fun to do. And again, I would put the Pat O'Brien's experience inside, particularly way up there. If you get a night where it's a little rowdy and, you know, the piano player is really into it, it's a lot of fun. That's a fun place to go if you're in town for a college football game. The college teams are singing their fight songs, and, you know, why not embrace it? So let's see. Jen McKay says, I can't imagine I should read these ahead of time.
You really should, yeah.
I can't imagine that you would have time for this, but do you have any interest in hosting a book club? I've read so many good books by New Orleans authors and about New Orleanians and would love to have a forum to enjoy and discuss this. So Jen is a member of the Patreon community, and you are not actually the first Patreon patron to suggest a book club. I've always been resistant because I read a lot. I read a lot of New Orleans books in preparation for the show, and I've been hesitant, but maybe that's something we do inside the Patreon community. So if that's something that you're seriously interested in, I know there's at least one other person, and I am almost positive his last name is Doyle, and excuse me that I cannot remember. But if you send me a note, Jen, in Patreon, then I will make a post in Patreon, and we can figure out how we start that up. I don't promise. I don't want to lead it, but I'm happy to have it be in the group. And I am constantly getting submissions of books. So I have loads of books and loads of book suggestions. It's just been something that, like, I spend so much time reading in preparation for the podcast. I've always been hesitant to host a book club. But if you send me a message, Jen, we will see if we can make that happen in the Patreon community.
Jen, be careful. You're going to wind up leading the book club. That's yes. How I got here tonight. Chris mouthed off about how he could answer some questions. I have a couple of answers for those, and here I am.
And I said, that's exactly what happened. All right, Lisa Bell, we will be in New Orleans Thanksgiving week. It's a good week to be here. Are there any activities we can plan to do on Thanksgiving Day before we head to dinner? Party of five, and my dad isn't super mobile. So the number one thing you want to do is make sure that you make a reservation for dinner. And make sure that you know what you're getting into. There are plenty of restaurants that are open. Making a reservation is a good plan post-COVID period, but certainly for Thanksgiving. I think you're going to find most of the museums are going to be closed. I'm not sure about the World War II Museum, so I would check and see if that's a possibility. And then she adds to her question, Chris, if it's not too late, any suggestions, age considerations for taking kids on adventures outside of New Orleans, such as the Whitney Plantation, swamp tours, kayak tours, John Lafitte National Historic Park? I'm going to say all those. I think Whitney is very, very focused on the perspective of the enslaved, and it is, in my opinion, the most important of the plantations to visit. It is also really moving. It's difficult. If you've been to the Holocaust Museum, I would put it on that level of experience. So you don't probably want to take young children, or you certainly don't want to take children maybe without talking to them a little bit about what they're going to experience. But I think my kids are about to be 12, and I would have no trouble taking them there. We'd have a discussion about it, first of all, but I think that's about the right age, 11 or 12. Kayak tours. We've had several people on talking about kayak tours. We've had kayak tour owners. The Honey Island Swamp Tour was a sponsor of the podcast. Kayaks are fun. The bayous right now are really low, so that's a problem. So low that some of the tour companies can't get out. But I would have no trouble taking, again, someone that's 11, 12, 14 years old on a kayak tour. Swamp tours, the more traditional ones, same thing. If you go to any of the tap rooms in the city or any of the breweries, you can bring kids. They often have live music and or pop-ups. You know, the museums, of course, are great options. But basically, all the things that you listed are things that I would have no trouble taking kids. I know that you do not have kids, Chris, but are there other places you would think of that you think are kid-friendly or worth doing?
I mean, you know, all that stuff. And I know you've done at least one, maybe more than one episode on New Orleans with children.
That's true, I have.
So and I would dig certainly that one go out. Back and dig that out. But I'm going to go back to that Thanksgiving Day thing. So I realize that your dad is not super mobile, Lisa, but there is no more a New Orleans thing to do on Thanksgiving Day than go to the track.
Oh, yeah, I can't believe I missed that.
And I mean, you've never if you've been to a horse track, you've only been to a horse track. It's quite a show on the infield out there and in and around the environs. It's the first day of their season. It's also where Jazz Fest is, but you know, the rest of the year it's a horse track.
Right.
And people go there to see and be seen, kind of a little bit tongue in cheek, but there's also some fancy dress going on, and I would be willing to bet you that the grandstand is accessible and that there's a way to get your dad
there's
there.
Elevators.
So, so if you want a memorable experience, check it out. Don't just discount it at all.
I can't believe I missed that.
I can't either, Mark.
One of my favorite Thanksgiving memories ever was spent at the track on Thanksgiving. It is the opening day. I think it's the third oldest track in the country. It's owned by Kentucky Kentucky, whoever owns the Kentucky Derby Fairgrounds. Churchill Downs. Churchill Downs now. But that's a good call.
Yeah.
And that's fun for all ages as well. Yeah, you know, everybody likes to see the horses run. Let's see. Mark Wingfield's back with what he promises is his last question. We'll see. I don't know if I trust that. Any breweries in New Orleans that serve cocktails as well? Is this even allowed? Boy, do you have the right person to answer that question. I enjoy a good beer, but my wife does not. She'll occasionally drink a cider, but she'd much rather a fruity cocktail. So Mr. Marshall, among many things he's done, worked for a local brewery. So can you answer that question?
I worked for two local breweries, although not one, one of them was not here. But in any event, yeah, so... Strictly, I'm not going to give you a lesson in the three-tier distribution system because we'll be here all night, but strictly speaking, the answer is no. A brewery can't have any alcohol that they don't make on premises if they are a production brewery and they are in distribution. However, there is also a brew pub license in our fair state of Louisiana, and there are exactly three places in town where beer is made on premises and you can get a cocktail or a glass of wine or some other alcohol there. So those are, in no particular order, the Bywater Brew Pub, which is about 2 years old over in the Bywater. And interestingly, two of the three of these are actually, the brewers are actually alumni of the brewery I used to work at, Urban South. So Sunny Day is the head brewer at Bywater Brew Pub. And as it implies, there's also food there. Really nice beer. Sonny knows exactly what he's doing. He's on a small system. He loves it. I've never seen a man so happy, which is great. And then the other one is the Crescent City Brew House.
Oh, yeah.
Old standby. Been in there, been like 30 years
but at least. But decent beer.
Yeah, decent beer. Have expanded their offerings a little bit of late. Used to be very focused on very traditional German styles, and they were good.
Uh-huh.
And same thing, cocktails, wine, food.
Yeah, decent food.
And that's in the quarter. And then finally, in the CBD, there's a place called Brewery St. X.
Pretty new.
Pretty new, few months, less, yeah. Way less than a year. Alex Flores is the brewer there, former head brewer at Urban South as well, and a friend of mine. So, you know, heads up if you're really into the local thing. It is actually not owned by a local company, but Alex is awfully local and he makes some fantastic beer as well. And again, they're focused on traditional styles, a lot of English styles mm-hmm. that you don't see very often. The beer is great. They have food in their dining room and there's a barbecue place next door.
Right.
Those are your three opportunities. And there are plenty of bars where you can get local beer and have a cocktail
right.
too. So yeah.
Those are good choices though. So thank you for that, Chris. So that wraps up our Patreon questions. If you want to be a Patreon, head over to patreon.com/beyondbourbonst.com. Another thing we've just introduced is a tip jar. So if you don't want to commit to ongoing support, but you do want to offer a tip my way in support of a particular show or answering a question or something like that, you can do that via PayPal or Venmo. I'm at Beyond Bourbon ST on both. Every bit helps and it's appreciated. Now let's see what we got from our awesome Facebook community, Chris. John Nordyke says, is the French Quarter any safer, especially after dark? Our last visit was awful in the French Quarter. We couldn't get off Canal Street on the streetcar fast enough. The vibe was just off and seemed unsafe, which is a shame because I love the French Quarter in the evening. I think on the one hand, there have been some incidents, particularly along Canal Street. For whatever reason, there's a stretch of Canal Street kind of from Bourbon as you head away from the Mississippi River towards the Sanger Theater, which is a terrific theater. We were just there the other night seeing the Counting Crows. But that three-block stretch, for whatever reason, seems to be a problem area. And then I think otherwise in the French Quarter, what you're dealing with is crimes of opportunity. You know, it's where tourists are. It's where tourists are drinking. So maybe not paying attention. A lot of people stay out really late in the French Quarter, which I don't advise doing, period. That's not just because I'm 52 years old, I don't think. I just think being out at 2 a.m. is not really a good thing in the French Quarter. Again, you know, if you're out that late, you've probably had a lot to drink. And it's more about being aware. You know, the thing about the French Quarter is it's also a neighborhood. And so it doesn't take too many blocks to be off of the hustle and bustle. And you're in what is actually a pretty quiet neighborhood most of the time. And that's a great spot for somebody who's looking to pickpocket you or hold you up. I don't know. What are your thoughts on crime and French Quarter?
I like you, I like the French Quarter in the evening. I like to be down there. And You know, I wouldn't say that it's particularly different from other places that you would go. And you know, look, this is all subjective, right? It totally depends on your tolerance for things being a little bit rough around the edges, or, you know, what your levels of acceptability are. Mm-hmm. I don't like Canal Street either, by the way. I don't think you find many people who do, which is a shame, because it really ought to be a bustling, vibrant place, and it is at its best. But yeah, I don't really have much to add to that. I just would say, watch your surroundings and you know, don't be out at 2 o'clock in the morning, and especially where it's quiet.
It's a shame about Canal Street. Palace Cafe is on Canal Street, and a really good restaurant. There was a time when Canal Street was this really grand boulevard. It's one of the widest boulevards in the United States, actually. I think it's 146 feet wide. The Sanger Theater is a terrific old theater. But for whatever reason, just that particular street is really, I haven't looked at the crime charts, but it's got to be way up there in terms of French Quarter crime. So I think your instinct is right, John. You want to get off Canal Street as quickly as you can, with the exception of if you're dining at the Palace Cafe. But two blocks in, you're to Iberville and Bienville Street, and it's fine. Mr. B's, that we've mentioned before, is on Iberville Street. We walked from Mr. B's to the Sanger Theater two Fridays ago and felt perfectly comfortable. So Leanna Fisher asks, or says, I live in a ski town that relies on tourists for our economy, and I know what makes a good tourist and a bad tourist here related to our culture and our mores, or culture and more. As a very regular visitor to New Orleans, what are things locals wish tourists would do and not do to be good tourists? I know we shouldn't stay at non-owner-occupied VRBOs, but what else can we do to help New Orleans at be its best and not be inadvertent jerks at a minimum? You know, the thing that gets me the most is the amount of trash on Bourbon Street in the French Quarter and how tourists complain about that. But that's coming from somewhere, and that's not coming mostly from locals. That's coming from people, you know, not being good tourists, frankly, going down Bourbon Street and thinking it's a public urinal or a public trash can, you know, or people drinking too much and getting sick on the street. I mean, all that smell is coming from somewhere, and I don't think it's local. So I think that's one thing. Like, you know, be respectful. Chris mentioned Disneyland or Disney World, and I think there's a little bit of that aspect to New Orleans, but people also seem to come here and forget that this is like not Disney World. This is a place where people live, including the French Quarter, including some of the other popular areas, you know, main streets throughout the city that people hang out and enjoy. So I don't know, Chris, what you would say about that.
I was just thinking, when Jennifer hears that, she's going to chuckle, because I say that all the time. The people come from out of town and think that they're in a bubble and it's safe. And it's not so much about crime, but one thing I would say is, quite honestly, if you're in the quarter walking around, those streets can be driven on for the most part. So please watch where you step off the curb for your own safety and to maybe reduce the aggravation of some local folks who just, you know, might hit you. Not intentionally, just could happen.
Yeah.
You know, and Leanna, I would say all the same things that you don't like about tourists in your town. Just don't do those things here either. Two big ones: tip, 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 and tip some more. Tip a lot, tip often, tip till it hurts. All of our service employees, of which I used to be one, rely on those to pay the rent. It's like they're, I had somebody tell me it was kind of like their 401k plan, you know? They budget based on what they get paid, but they get to have nice things because of tips. So do that. Also try to not go to, I would just say go to local businesses as much as possible, local restaurants.
Yeah, and that's pretty easy. There are more chain restaurants here than there's ever been, but there's still not a lot. You almost have to go out of your way to not eat or drink local. I think that's good advice. I think the tip advice is absolutely spot on. So much of this community is service industry people who are working for not much money other than tips. So I think that's great advice. Susan Richmond Hall Craft, have you done a podcast on the history of the streetcars? And are there any historic ships or riverboats that can be toured? So I actually did do an episode on the streetcars. I'll have to put a link in the show notes. I'm 190, and I want to say it was either 33 or 61, and I have no idea why those two numbers, but it was a relatively early one. It might have even been earlier, Susan, but we did a whole history of the streetcar going back to 1833. In terms of historic ships, there really aren't. We sometimes get Fleet Week here, so you get that opportunity. We've had there was a traveling exhibit of some really old sailing ships that I think we went on together several years ago. you can, of course, not take a tour, but you can take a cruise on the Natchez, and I'm drawing a blank on the other one. There's actually two other ones that I'm just drawing a blank on. The Natchez is pretty old, 18-something, but it's not really a tour. You obviously just take a ride down the river, and you're welcome to meander about the boat. So I hope that helps. But yes, go back, and I'll put a link in the show notes to the streetcar one. That was pretty in-depth. Lisa Bell says, I saw a great list of dining options the other day, but can't remember what group it was in. What is the best seafood restaurant not fried in the French Quarter, specifically if they serve blackened redfish? So that's a pretty... My first instinct to this was not actually in the French Quarter, but my first response to this, Chris, was Pêche, which is more in the Central Business District, and they tend to... They have a wood-fired grill, so they tend to focus on a lot of grilled fish. Blackened redfish is hit or miss whether you're actually going to get blackened redfish. Back in the days when Paul Prudhomme made that dish so famous, almost fished it out of existence, actually, because of the popularity. So you'll find it. Palace Cafe does a good job with fish dishes. We just mentioned that. We've mentioned G.W. Finn's.
Those are the ones. That's it. Yeah. And I was going to say get out of the Quarter, but I can't think of anything that's too far out of the Quarter except Pêche. And of course, we said Brightson's, and they have great seafood, but they are not strictly a seafood restaurant.
Right. And I don't know that you're going to find black and red fish on the menu there.
You're not going to find it.
But Pêche is a great choice. Really nice restaurant, not far from the French Quarter, of course. So that's a place I would check out. Let's see. Stacy Wright, where can I find an Asian market, and what would you recommend for occasional Chinese cuisine restaurant? So before we, actually, I'm going to ask you, you mentioned this, but James Cullen, who actually is a sponsor of the show and has been on the podcast a couple of times, The Accidental Cajun, he answered this in the Facebook group, and he's a chef, by the way. He said, the best Asian market is the Hong Kong market in Gretna on the West Bank, and I can't pronounce it. Is it Dan Zion?
I think it's Don John, and I agree Thank with you. Him on both counts.
Yeah. Is my recommendation for Chinese food. So there you go.
Chinese, unlike the cornucopia of really good Vietnamese and Thai food we have here, the Chinese food that's available is not quite on the same level, and it's just not a big part of the immigrant base or the culture. So it kind of suffers a little bit. But Don John is the shining star exception. If you've never been there, it's in the Quarter. Go there immediately, if not sooner, if you want Chinese food.
And the market, you know, it's interesting that you're right, there's not a lot of Chinese restaurants here. Because the Asian market, the Hong Kong market, is a huge market. So there's clearly a population, and it's a fresh market there. But there you go. You have the chef and you have Chris both recommending the same place. So I would go with that. Let's see. Chandler Crittenden. What are things that people from the age of 18 to 20 can do when traveling in New Orleans? I think the list of things that you can't do is the shorter list, right? Obviously, you can't legally drink. But you can go hear live music any place that serves food. So again, I'll put in another plug for Bufa's, which was close to extinction, and the community has rallied behind it. Because they are a restaurant, they have terrific live music, and because they are a restaurant that serves food, obviously, then people under the age of 21 can go. You can't drink at the local tap rooms, local breweries, many of them have music. Many of them are family friendly. So that's something to keep in mind. And then, you know, this show hasn't been focused on it because of the questions, with the exception of the New Orleans Museum of Art. But there are tremendous museums in the city. The World War II Museum is consistently rated one of the best museums in the country. And if you have any interest at all in America's history in World War II. This is the place where the duck boats, where the Higgins boats were built, because Higgins was from New Orleans. It's every bit as on par with the Smithsonian museums as any other. And Chris and I both lived in the DC area and spent plenty of time there in those museums. I think that's a you shouldn't miss kind of thing. Another thing I think are the plantations. Again, that question came up earlier. When the weather's nice, a kayak tour. Gosh, I really think, I mean, the limit, you know, if you're coming during Mardi Gras is very family friendly. Mardi Gras, frankly, is a time when you wouldn't have trouble finding a drink if you were 18 to 20 years old. I'm not endorsing that. I'm just saying that's a fact. I mean, there's really not that many things that truly exclude you.
No, I mean, my first, Mark, you've known me a long time. My first reaction when I read this was, you can do everything anybody else can do, just about, except for drink legally. And, you know, and Mark's right. So the tap rooms and breweries and all that, they're all ages. Therefore, a lot of them, most of them, have some kind of a non-alcoholic option. So, you know, if you're interested in doing that kind of thing, and if you're with a group of people who are of age and you know, that you want to go there, that's a good thing to do. But yeah, they're, you know, the list of exclusions is pretty small.
It really is. Yeah, there's plenty. I would have no trouble coming to visit if I were, whatever that makes me, a college freshman to junior, I guess, or if I were coming with a family. There's plenty of things to do. So that's the end of the questions, Chris. Anything else on your mind about visiting or dining in New Orleans or things you've done lately that just really popped out to you? I know you guys went to Brightson's a week ago.
Right. So I know when you talked to Ian recently, Lengua Madre came up.
Yeah.
So I will say, so we had reservations for Lengua Madre tomorrow night, but my adorable wife is ill, unfortunately, so we're going to cancel those. But they are closing, but it's a long goodbye, and I think it's November. And it's very amicable. The landlord wants to do something else with the building, and they're going to reopen a spot, down in the Bywater, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're coming anytime soon and you can get a reservation at Lengua Madre if you like really interesting Mexican, Central American-inspired food, as long as you don't get ahead of me in line.
And it's a tasting menu there. Yeah, so you get the menu. You actually get the menu after the dinner, I believe.
Yep. And get the wine pairing.
Mm, yeah, very good.
And tip your server.
But Chris is right. The chef and owner there, they're going to move on and do something different. Still Mexican. I think going to be a little bit more casual. They're going to keep a little bit of the tasting menu and move away and offer some non-tasting menu type, you know, just a la carte options. So yeah, that's good. Well, Chris, thank you for joining me today. It's been fun.
You're welcome. Same.
I think you've held your own. You had opinions ahead of time, and I think you contributed to the show. So thank you.
I read the questions ahead of time. That's my key.
So that's good.
Yeah.
Thank you to everybody that took the time to write in a question. We can't do a Q&A show without you, and the questions are always wide-ranging and interesting, and I hope interesting for people that listen. The feedback is always that people enjoy the question and answer show, so thank you. Please support our sponsors. Consider leaving a tip or joining Patreon to support the work I'm doing. And with that, we're going to turn it over to my girls, who have been amazingly quiet while we're recording this episode. But we're going to turn it over to Olivia and Sophia to close us out, so thanks, y'all.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.